listening to Opening the Harp Chakra, the podcast, bringing you beautiful, healing, magical harp music and talking with the artists that create it. I'm your host, Jay Michaels. Today's guest is a music therapist, director of the International Harp Therapy Program, founder of Rainbow of Sound Color, My World Harp Circles. Her website, playharp.com and harptherapycampus.com. She is Christina Turin. Christina, hi, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm here in California in this heat wave that we're having, so I'm just going to stay pretty cool with you today.
Well, Christina, I'm wondering if you could tell us about your beginnings, the story of what led you to first become a harp player.
Oh, okay. Let's see. It was a very interesting beginning. My mother was a harpist. She studied at Juilliard. It was her dream to go off to learn how to play the harp. And I'll tell you very quickly this because it's a nice, fascinating story. Her roommate was a princess of Poland and was studying the violin. So they had violin and harp. Well, the princess of Poland, her brother came over from Poland, who was a prince of Poland. And he had been married, his wife died in the war, but he took up with my mother. And for 4 years, they were together. And then after that, he got a letter saying that his wife was alive in a concentration camp, and he picked up and went back and to Poland, and my mother was bereft. So she ended up going to the summer home in Maine, and she was growing cucumbers in a cucumber patch. And my father came up, who was a nice baseball player, with his little girlfriend, and he said he wanted to buy some cucumbers. Well, for his mom to make sunshine pickles, okay? I'm getting to the story. He saw my mother bent over the cucumbers in the cucumber patch, asked her out to a baseball game, and lo and behold, a month later, they were engaged. A month later, they were married. 10 months later, I was born. And I happened to live in the backwoods of Maine in a cottage with no running water, no electricity, but we had a great, big, beautiful gold harp that just absolutely shined when the sun came in. So my parents were very different backgrounds, and I ended up, they pushed my high chair behind the harp when I was 1 or 2 years old, and I would just sit there and pluck the strings. And so that was my beginning. Really?
Yeah, you got an early start, and what a great opportunity for a very young person to be able to get right in there and start playing right away.
Well, I love doing that, and I have a couple of grandchildren now, and I put the harp right in front of them, and they sit right down and they play.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing.
It is. Well, let's play some of your music. Actually, this first piece is actually two pieces I'd like to feature, Tranquility and Reflections. I found this really soothing, really beautiful. I wonder if you could tell us about the pieces.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tranquility, I was in Ireland on tour, and I got to go to this amazing place where I could just sit down in the river, and it was as hot that day as it is today here. And I just sat in the river with my little harp, and I just started improvising, and that's what came out. In fact, I recorded it just about the same way that it came out. And it flows into another song called Reflections. And Reflections was an interesting song because there's a Needham Festival in Cannes, France, and I was playing on the cruise ship where they went out kind of partying at night, and I had a harp that lights up in the dark and changes colors. And so when that happened, I could just see all of the coastline of Cannes with all the lights rippling down on the water as I was playing. And I just started improvising to that, and we got Reflections. So that's what you'll hear.
Two pieces from our guest today, Tranquility and Reflections, Christina Turin. That's just lovely music, Christina. Let's talk about your work as a music therapist, because that type of calming, relaxing music must fit right into that line of work, right?
Well, it certainly does. But yeah. My first comment should be that, yes, I am a music therapist, and I did the training for that. However, there's another avenue of music to be used therapeutically, and it's called therapeutic musicianship. And it's interesting because one is more goal-oriented. As a music therapist, you're trying to affect a change in behavior. So you're always kind of trying to get that person to reach that goal. And at the same time, The therapist is the key person with the music as the tool, the instrument as the tool. This other pathway that has developed since the 1980s and 90s is called therapeutic music. And this is a different way of thinking about music. It's not goal-oriented, but it's being able to let all of the qualities of music come through the instrument. And the player is just basically a conduit for all of that to just come through. We're not trying to change any behavior because we believe that the person innately knows what they need for their own healing. So we work with five different qualities of music. One is that we match their breathing rate. And second, we play to their resonant tone. Now, resonant tone, everybody has a resonant tone, and each part of the body vibrates to a frequency. I took a program called Resonant Kinesiology with Susan Borg, and this program teaches you to feel the vibrations, the sympathetic vibrations of sound to what's happening in your body. So we teach that in the International Heart Therapy Program. And it's just a very different way. We also use the different kinds of elements of music based on the Chinese five elements. So if somebody's got too much fire energy, then you want to kind of water that fire down with water music. And then if somebody is too rigid, they have too much metal energy, then what you can do is you can play the fire, because the fire will melt the metal. And then, so all of this study shows how you can balance energies with music. And so we have the elements, we have the tempo, we have the resonant tone. We also like to play the type of music that people enjoy, because it speaks to them more. And the last one is that we teach people all different kinds of ways of using intervals in music. And we do that through the modes of music. So each mode has a feeling. We call that modes for moods. So if somebody is really depressed, you wouldn't want to play minor music for them, because that would just put them further down. But if they were too hyper, of course, you'd want to play it. All of this music was transcribed from the records called Wind Records. from the Shanghai Orchestra, how they use music for headaches, for strokes, heart attacks, etc. So the being a music therapist is quite different than being from a therapeutic musician. What happened for me was in 1990, my father went into the hospital and he had bypass surgery. And we really thought we were losing him at the time. He was in a coma for 2 weeks. And anything I played that was just kind of quiet and soft, if a person's in a coma, they're just going to keep on sleeping. But we have found that if you play the music that they may have enjoyed or they may have recently listened to, then that would help bring them out of that. So I've had quite a bit of success with people calling me to say, could you come and play? My daughter was playing the violin in the orchestra, and this was up in Oregon, and I went there, and I just played her part, and all of a sudden, she woke up, and I've had another one where somebody actually collapsed and had a stroke, and they happened to be listening to my music, so I knew the particular album that they were listening to, and I went and I played that, and she actually came out of the coma. So there's so many things. It's not just entertaining and just playing pretty music. There's so much intricacy in how to learn all these elements and vibrations, how they affect different parts of the body. And that brings us into the chakra system.
There's a lot to it, certainly, many levels, and it's just fascinating to learn more about it, and I appreciate you sharing that. Do you generally work? It seems like you see people one-on-one, make appointments. Do you work through hospitals as well, or is it pretty much just by appointment independently?
Well, I started in Vermont in the hospital in the medical center, and then I had this very mystical experience when I went to Glastonbury tour in England. And as a result of that experience, I started the program, and lo and behold, we had 13 people within two months sign up. And that was in 1993. And now, over the past three decades, we have now people that have graduated from 32 countries, and they're serving on five continents. But the thing is that I ended up doing the hospital route where we trained people. And then I got invited to come to San Diego to work at the hospice. So I was with hospice in San Diego for 17 years. And one of the things, Jay, that was really interesting was that we took such good care of our people there. We had 15 different complementary modalities that the people didn't die when they were supposed to. They were supposed to die within 5 months in order to get Medicare, and they didn't. In fact, they would live for like a year after, but unfortunately, a lot of the doctors did not take them off Medicare. And then what happened is that Medicare came back and said, you owe us millions of dollars, and we had to go bankrupt. So that was a very sad day because it was one of the top three training hospices in the world. And it just says something about our healthcare system, really. And now we all just kind of fanned out to 17 different little hospices in San Diego. So I'm with another hospice now. But people, you know, usually they come into hospice the last two or three days before they pass away. And we used to have about eight people a day transition. So it was definitely a lot of work. And then, of course, I had the training session where people would come and they would train there at the hospice.
Well, can we feature another piece of your music?
Sure.
This is another one that you wrote called Love of Creation, if you don't mind introducing it.
Love of Creation. It was a beautiful autumn day in Vermont, and the trees were all on flame with different colors, and then the leaves started falling. And so as you hear this piece, you'll hear this kind of falling sound and it segues into a song about a bird.
Christina Turin on the podcast today. Your website, Christina, is playharp.com. What is your philosophy for teaching the harp?
Oh, you know, I think for so long I played music by composers, and I always read music, read notes, and I would memorize music. And I had attended the Mozarteum in Austria and McGill in Montreal. And every time I would go there, they want you to change the technique. And they were really preparing people for orchestral playing, which I did a fair amount in some Broadway playing. But for me, when I went to Scotland, I saw my first little harp. And I had talked to my dad, who was a carpenter, and my mother, who was a harpist. And they had the same idea that wouldn't it be great if we had little harps for children to learn how to play? And so I came back and I started getting interested in the small harp and the music of Scotland, medieval music, early music, Baroque music on the early harps. And my partner at the time, we did wonderful travels through Europe with a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. And I got to see so many different kinds of harps. So I then decided to go to New York City to play at the Irish Festival. And this man came up to me and he said, "Do you know that the harp is just as important to Scotland as it is to Ireland?" And I said, "Yeah, I do. I'm Scottish." And he says, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" So together we started the Scottish Harp Society of America. And it grew from three people. In 5 years, we had a mailing list of 8,500 people from the Scottish Games. Mm-hmm. And we would get together and we would play Scottish music. But as a result of that, it went into improvisation. And when I look back on it, I think this way. I think that the relationship that you have with a composer is like being married to that composer. But when you can make your own music and you can improvise, then it's sort of like you're marrying yourself. And it's the music that's within you that finally comes out and is an expression.
Yeah.
So I would say the different ways that I go about that is that, yes, I teach technique first because that's really important. I teach right mixed improvisation because it's a very right brain activity. And if you start looking at notes and rhythms and everything, then you jump into your left brain. I've been doing a lot of research lately on music in the brain with a couple doctors in Hawaii and in Vermont, Dartmouth. And there's so many parts of the brain that are activated with music. I'd love to be able to just talk about that someday. But it's important that you cover all the aspects, technique, repertoire, improvisation, arranging, and composition. And that's where I come from, and I call that the 5-star program.
So perhaps we'll have you back another time. We'll talk specifically about music in the brain. That sounds like a great subject to cover. Well, I want to hear some more of your music. This next piece is called Willow. It has some flute playing in it, which is really nice. What inspired this piece?
Well, when I was in seventh grade, I remember walking home from school, and my dad was a manager of a fruit farm then, and I was walking past the apple tree, and I thought to myself, I think the apple tree has a song. I knew that the maple tree had a song. So when I got here out to San Diego, I have a wonderful studio with Peter Sprague. And I wanted to do an album of all the different modes of music. And so the cypress tree is very Phrygian mode. And the redwoods are very Dorian mode, very strong. And the maple is just beautiful and happy. Aspen tree is very fluttering. And that's like a Lydian mode. But the willow tree is just hangs there very gently. And it just sways back and forth. And that to me was the Aeolian mode. So when I was in the studio, we were doing the all these recordings. And Steve Kadala, a wonderful flute player who I actually know from my friend Kim Robertson, because he played on her albums as well. And he was in the studio and doing some studio work for musicians. And we just went into the room and we just sat down. And I had the harp and he was in the other room with his flute. And we just started improvising one take. And that's what you'll hear. And it was so Willow Tree.
Thank you.
That piece is called Willow. Our guest today, Christina Turin, playing the harp. That's just a really nice piece of music. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
To me, the harp is a very magical, very healing instrument. And many of my guests and I discuss that, and I always get a different insight from everyone, and it's really wonderful. I'm wondering your thoughts about the magical and or the healing qualities of the harp.
Okay. Well, of course, the very first thought is that it's very angelic, and people have all these references from the Bible about the harps of gold, and just the shape of it is almost like a heart. But if you actually look at the scientific point of this, when you have a harp, you have a string that goes from the grommet on the soundboard all the way up to the bridge pin. And what you do is you pluck that string in the middle. And if you look on an oscilloscope, what you have is a perfect figure eight pattern because you've actually played that in there. So what you have is an overtone of an octave. Okay. And then if you were to play down a little bit lower or two thirds up, two thirds down, you would have a fifth overtone. And then you keep going on making harmonics on that one string, and you can get the third octave tones of the thirds. And then you go into the fourth octave overtones, and that's a whole a realm to itself. In fact, I probably should have asked you to play the Sky's Invitation because it's music built on the fourth octave overtones. And what's so neat about that is that each one of those notes and those harmonics are the notes of all the planets in space. So I belong to IANDS, I-A-N-D-S, which is the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And we actually listened to music that sounded like the experience that we had after our near-death experience. And everybody gravitated toward this music by Morten Lauritsen. And the professor put the score up on the screen. Everybody was saying, I want to listen to it. I want to listen to it. I don't want to see it. Well, I wanted to see it because I wanted to see why it sounded the way it did. And here we have all those raised fourth and lowered sevenths, which is the fourth octave overtones. And it was just amazing. So back to your question. So when you pluck a string on the harp, the string has a pure sound compared to like if you're fretting a guitar and you're plucking it down toward the hole, the sound hole, that string has to go vibrate all the way down, come all the way back and crisscross down there. So you're getting a high harmonic there, just like a piano. The piano, you hit the key, and then it goes all the way down the string, the vibration, and it comes up and it crosses at the top and goes all the way down. So when people talk about the pure sound of the harp, what you have is the fact that that and the psaltery, there's not too many instruments that have that ability to create that figure eight pattern so clearly. And as Barbara Crowe, the past president of the Music Therapy Association, would say, there's no such thing as pure sound. So that would, I mean, if you're going to make a sound, it's going to make a vibration and it's going to have a crisscross point. So that's the scientific part of it, other than the fact that it's such a beautiful sounding instrument. To this day, in all my decades here, I always hear that sound in an orchestra, the harp on the music.
It is a wonderful instrument, that's for sure. Your websites are playharp.com and harptherapycampus.com, and we will include links to both of those in the show notes to the website so people can find you. I'd like to have one final example of your music today. I wondered if you could introduce your piece called In the Glow.
Yeah. There's, I think, a special place on earth for each person, and my place happens to be the Isle of Iona in Scotland. And there's a word in Gaelic called eksha. And eksha means that you're on the brink of the water between the worlds. You're between the worlds. And every time I go there for a retreat, I just go into a silent retreat. I have a little notebook, and I just start jotting down the melodies that come to my head. And, you know, it could be about a little lamb. It could be about the beautiful white strand of the monks. And I went climbing up on the hill called Dunning, and I looked out, and you can see the water all around this island because it's only 1 mile wide and 3 miles long. And it's where St. Columba brought Christianity to Scotland. And in the glow, it was getting in the evening and the sun was going down and it was glowing across the ocean while I was on top of the mountain where there's a holy well up there. And it comes from my album, Inspirations, Iona Inspirations. And it just, the tune just came to me and I went into the studio and I had some friends who I invited to play along with me. So I hope you enjoy this.
Thank you.
from today's guest, Christina Turin, the very beautiful In the Glow. Christina, thank you so much for being a guest. I really enjoy talking to you and listening to your insights about the therapeutic aspects of music and your thoughts on the harp and teaching. Thank you so much. This was so
You're so
nice.
Really welcome. I love the fact that you're featuring so many of the harp players. And I hope you keep on doing this because there's always more harp players coming. May I say one thing about chakras?
Yes.
I think it's really important since your work on that. There are a couple different, what you would say, theories about the chakra system. Mm-hmm. And when I do the chakras, we often think about the base being like do, and then re, then mi, then fa, sol, la, ti, with the crown being the high one. And yet, studying with Fabian Naaman, he would say that the low chakra is do, but then you would go up a fifth, and the second one would be a fifth above, and then the third one would be a fifth above that. And in some ways, that kind of makes sense because it goes in kind of a spiral energetic form around the body from front to back.
Right.
And so in all of my research, what I did was I created a CD that goes with my book, Cradle of Sound, called Heaven 7. And I just believe that people know what they need. And when they listen to the different seven chakras on there, it might be something for the heart chakra in one key, and it might be in another key. And I just think we have to be very careful in how we present sound healing and harp healing, not to make everything so precise. For instance, some people will say that the E is the low E is the frequency that's going to move the colon. And then you think to yourself, what if you have a newborn baby with a little tiny colon versus a 200-pound person with a big colon? Is that frequency going to be the same for everyone? So my feeling, along with many others, is that don't go out and try to tell people what everything is supposed to be. Let them experience it for themselves, because I think there's a lot of personal healing going on.
Well, thank you so much for those words of wisdom, and thank you for being a guest on the podcast. I really do appreciate it. If you have questions or guest suggestions, please email me at openingtheharpchakra@yahoo.com. We've also included links to PayPal and Venmo if you'd like to help contribute to the production of this endeavor. In the weeks to come, we will have more beautiful, healing music from all around the world. I'm Jay Michaels. Thank you so much. Peace. Namaste.